Hello, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg, with another bonus episode. I'm seeing a lot of theater, and I'm very happy about that. But I'm using, every time I see a work, whether it's a play or a musical, as a way to talk to you about communication and collaboration efforts. In other words, not only am I looking at the ways that the creative team and the production team on shows came up with to do some incredible stuff to innovate the theater experience, but also when I get communication lessons from what I've seen, I'm going to talk to you about that too. And this was a combination of things. First of all, last night I saw An Enemy of the People by Henrik Ibsen on Broadway with Jeremy Strong and Michael Imperioli in the two lead roles. I love Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos and various other things that he's done, but really I remember him as Christopher Moltisanti in The Sopranos when he was amazing. And Jeremy Strong I know from Succession, although really I've never watched Succession, but he's won all the Emmys and everything, so I'm assuming he's great on that show. Okay, but let me talk about An Enemy of the People. Briefly, it takes place somewhere in, I'm not sure if it's Norway or Sweden. I'm assuming Sweden. Honestly, I don't know, but I think so. And the play is about two brothers, one of whom is the town's mayor and one of whom is the town's doctor. And they're building these baths for the supposedly healing waters in the town that they're going to invite sick people to come to and get well, kind of a wellness retreat. And the doctor realizes that, and I'm not giving anything away, the doctor does some tests and realizes that there are bacteria, microorganisms in the water that could be very dangerous for anybody who goes in to the water. And it's about what happens when he raises the hue and cry. And I'm not going to give you any spoilers or anything, but it's a very timely play, right? We've had water crises all over the place, and Flint, Michigan, hasn't had clean water in years and years. So, and it's interesting to me that the answers for that are drink bottled water, as if, excuse me? No, if the water is contaminated, you not only clean up the mess, but you find where the source of the contaminant is, and you stop it at the source so that you don't have to keep worrying about it, right? That's logical to me, but there I go being logical again. Okay. Anyway, here are the innovations that I saw last night. And then I want to talk about something actually that is very, something that I've been saying for a long time about hitting rock bottom and also about listening and communication. So the innovations. First of all, the play was in the round, and the stage was a long rectangle, which was very interesting. But the part of it was they lit the whole thing at first with lanterns, actual, I guess, oil lanterns, and then candles and things like that. And that's part of the sort of the setting of the play, and they let us know the time period by just lighting candles. And there was very little lighting, and at first I thought, you know, this is kind of dark. But then my eyes got adjusted to it, and then they brought up some spotlights and things like that to light the various characters. The great David Patrick Kelly was in it. I saw him in Once, and of course, he's in one of my favorite 1980s science fiction type movies called Dreamscape with Kate Capshaw and Dennis Quaid and Max von Sydow. That's right. Anyway, so, and he's in it. And one of the things that they did with the lighting was that it generated the mood. It let us see that it was definitely not taking place in modern day. It was taking place at a time before electricity, and they let us know all of that this was a period piece, and of course the costuming was like that. But I thought that starting everything with taking the time to actually light the lanterns and the candle, it was really interesting. It's like, oh, this is, you're taking, and I'm not going to say, oh, you're wasting valuable real estate or anything like that. It's just interesting that they decided that was important enough to focus on it, because, and it kind of started a little bit before the whole thing started, but it was there. And they also interspersed Nordic songs Swedish or Norwegian, I'm not sure which, in the middle. And the people weren't incredible singers, but it was still very interesting to hear these, what I'm assuming are folk songs, in between scenes or, and before the show started. And they did this other thing. There was no real intermission. Instead, what they did is they took like an 8-minute break. So the show was 2 hours and they took an 8-minute break and they served liquor for free. You could just get in line and get a little paper cup full of some sort of liquor. And I don't drink, so I didn't go up. Plus, I'm walking with a cane right now, and that would have just been such a pain in the butt. So I decided not to go up. But they had cast members sing and serenade us more with additional songs, which I thought was very, it's another very interesting thing that they decided to do. So I thought that was really cool. And the whole thing was, it was enjoyable for sure, but it definitely had some things that made me go, huh. And here's what it did. Now, there are a lot of times in the show where people talk over each other. Now, what does that mean? It means one character is saying lines and then the other character not just interrupts them, but talks over them, and then they talk over each other. And I think part of it was they were trying to bring across these people are not listening to each other, right? The doctor's raising the hue and cry and people are not listening to him. In fact, they vilify him. And so the problem for me is that how do you bring that across while still bringing across what the actors are trying to say? Did Ibsen write it in that they talk over each other that much, or was that a directorial choice? Because there were certain times that I just couldn't understand them. People are saying things and I cannot understand what you're saying. And then they would stop and pause and kind of look at each other. And then I started thinking, is this an off night? Because I know one of the characters, one of the bigger characters, was an understudy, and maybe he's not as well rehearsed as some of the others. And I don't really know if it was he who was causing the bulk of the sort of awkward push-pull, because I noticed it with the main characters as well, that they just didn't seem to be on, and it didn't seem as crisp as I would have imagined it would be, especially with the high praise all of the main actors, have been getting. So I was wondering, was this a directorial choice to give us a real sort of bang you over the head experience of people just speaking without listening? And or was it an off night? Because I would have to see Ibsen's original script, which I wouldn't understand because it's not in English. But what was meant by that? And that kind of made me start thinking about communication in general and how often we're so busy thinking about what we have to say next that we're not really listening to the other person, or we're so interested in talking that we don't wait for them to finish and we just start talking. And some of us, I do this, I interrupt people for sure. In fact, my husband hates that I interrupt him so much, but then he interrupts me, and often that's sort of the way conversations flow or subjects change, things like that. But in this play, they're talking about the potential deaths of many people, and they stop listening to each other, and greed takes over and blah, 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 and then the snowball rolls downhill. And so it's so interesting to me how much that brought home the point about communication and about whether or not we listen, whether or not we take the time. And one of the things that I tell all of my guests, and if you're a regular listener to the show, you'll probably hear me say that I have embraced the pause. When someone is talking and I ask these questions that usually sort of evince longer, more thoughtful answers. That's what I try to do in all my interviews. What happens is I'm listening and I'm synthesizing, but I may not be finished by the time they're done. I may not be finished really taking in what they've said, and I've got to think about it for a minute. And that's okay, right? That's one of the things that we can do for ourselves and each other, is sort of to take a minute and go, okay, where am I and how do I feel about what I've just heard, and how do I respond? Not react, but respond. And you know my thing about react versus respond. The difference between reacting to something and responding to it is how many breaths you take between what happens and what you do about it. Reacting means it's immediate and if in an emergency situation, yeah, you sometimes have to react immediately. But if it's not an emergency situation, to me, if something happens that's jarring, a better way to do it is to respond. And that means take a couple breaths and see how you feel and see what the optimal way to respond is rather than knee-jerk reaction. But in this show, that's not what they were doing. and so I felt like I wanted to yell to them, embrace the pause, because that would be something that would have helped all of them. They all got so into what they wanted that they were no longer listening to one another, except for Petra, the doctor's daughter. She seemed to be listening, and she was probably my favorite character, because she knew what she wanted and she was not going to bow to pressure from anybody else. And I enjoyed that very much. Anyway, so that was interesting to me how they chose to do that. And I would love to see the actual script of the show to see, did they choose to have that kind of talking over each other, interrupting each other thing? Or was that a result of an off night among the actors? And I don't know. Another thing that I wanted to say, first of all, Edwin Hodge was there, the actor Edwin Hodge, who is on one of the FBI's, I want to say FBI Most Wanted. He's done other things. I've enjoyed him. I think he's a great actor. And I think his brother, Aldous Hodge, is also a great actor. But I'm standing, I went downstairs, used the bathroom or whatever, and I'm waiting in line, and I'm looking at this man who's sort of walking around looking at Circle and Square Theater. They have all of these photographs up of previous plays, and they have them sort of broken down by decade, and it's really cool to just stand and look. It's a really neat space. And I'm seeing this guy walking around being very curious about all the different photographs that are up on the wall, and I go, oh, I think I know him. But you know, it's funny, when you see a famous person, and I don't know if this happens to you, but when you see a famous person, you'll sometimes go, I know that person, as if you're friends with them. You're not friends with them. You've never seen them before in real life, and they certainly don't know who you are. But because you've seen them on TV or in movies or on stage or whatever, they seem familiar to you. And of course they're not. And of course they are not the character that you might know them for, right? They're different. They are a person unto themselves. And today being the second Star Wars day, in a month full of Star Wars days. Yesterday was May the 4th, so that's May the 4th be with you. Today is Revenge of the 5th, haha. And then, of course, actual Star Wars Day, the day the original movie premiered, was May 25th. So we're going to have that Star Wars Day later this month. But anyway, the reason I'm bringing up Star Wars is I felt like I knew these characters, like I knew Harrison Ford, or rather Han Solo, or Princess Leia. And of course I didn't, but that was the mindset, you know, oh, you're my person. I know you. I love you. No, you don't, you know, and I don't know Edwin Hodge, and I certainly didn't come up and talk to him, but it was kind of neat to go, oh yeah. And I heard him meet one of the characters who he knew, one of the actors, the guy who played the captain, apparently was a friend of his. And they met up, and they were chatting while I was standing in line for the bathroom. And he was really effusive. And I love when actors love and respect each other's work. To me, we can all keep learning. We can all sort of see what needs to be done. And the captain was great. The guy who played the captain was great. I really enjoyed him. He was one of my favorite characters and one of my favorite performances, interestingly. I would have expected to love Jeremy Strong. I would have expected to love Michael Imperioli. I love Michael Imperioli. I think he was great. I don't know Jeremy Strong well enough to know what he was bringing to the play. He's nominated for a Tony, so I'm sure he's great. I just didn't feel it. And I don't know, again, I don't know if it was an off night or if this is choice. These are choices the production made. I have no idea. Anyway, so it was really interesting. I make it a point, and I'm jumping around and I apologize, but I make it a point not to go up to actors or celebrities or whatever if I see them. Living in New York, you see people all the time. The other night I was standing in line to go see another show, and there was an actor and his partner who is an actress. I've seen them in things, could not remember their names, but I've seen them in lots of things. And they were right in front of me in line. And of course, again, I'm not going to say anything, because that's rude. they're living their lives, they're doing their private thing, but it's so cool to me. It's like a few years ago, I was in a car and there's Aaron Paul walking. We're slowly sort of inching along in traffic and Aaron Paul is walking alongside us, essentially. You know, he's living his life and doing his thing, but it was really cool. I'm like, oh, hey, Aaron Paul. I didn't say anything. New Yorkers don't. And I'm not quite, yeah, I found out yesterday being on Why'd You Move Here, which is comedian Rory Lutz's new show. I went up to Washington Heights and we recorded my episode of his new show, which will be out sometime later this month. But anyway, I found out I'm not quite yet a real New Yorker. So I want to be. I'm a wannabe New Yorker. I'm getting there. Anyway, so I don't come up to these people because communication with them is, at that point, it's me invading their lives, and I don't want to do that. But it's really cool to see them. It's really cool to see them be regular people and be effusive when they see something they like Edwin Hodge was in seeing Enemy of the People, in seeing his friend in an Enemy of the People last night. Anyway, and here's the last thing that I loved that I've been saying for years before I knew this play existed, before I knew that this was addressed in this play. You've probably heard me say this, that I love the notion of rock bottom, because when you hit rock bottom, you're finally standing on solid ground. And basically, that line was in the show. Not exactly that line. It was something along the lines of, well, I actually think it's a good thing to get to the bottom because then you know where the ground is. That was the translation. And yeah, I love that notion so much. We tend to think of rock bottom as a terrible place, but I don't think of it as a terrible place. I think of it as a starting place. Rock bottom to me is when you can finally stand on solid ground and begin again. That's what I think about that. And so having that be in the show just made me so happy. It really did. I loved that it was in there. And I loved that this is something that I've been saying since before I ever knew this was in the play, because I just saw the play for the first time last night. But it's something to think about. And in fact, I'm recording this episode before I meditated for the day. So maybe that's what I'll think about in my meditation. I tend to give myself an intention before I meditate. And this is a little piece of advice from me to you. If you are meditating, if you're a regular meditator, or if you are just starting out, giving yourself an intention is a really beautiful way to make your meditation, a part of your day, but B, informative. One of the things that I hear people say is, I don't have time to meditate. Okay, well, if you can't make meditation a regular practice just for the sake of meditation, set an intention before you meditate. I want to relax. I want to have my subconscious, in my case, I want to have my subconscious mind bring to me additional insights about the notion of rock bottom. That'll be my intention for my meditation this morning. Why? Just 'cause. Just because I would love, you know me, I say this a lot, our subconscious minds see all, hear all, and most importantly, remember all. And we don't tend to think of that as a possibility, but it is. They're like a little supercomputer. Now, our conscious minds don't. It's very hard for us to keep track of all of the bits and pieces of information consciously. I think we'd go insane if we could do that. Perfect recall is not always a great thing, just like perfect pitch is not always a great thing. And that's another thing that I think about with perfect recall and the subconscious mind. Perfect pitch. One of the things that we tend to think of is perfect pitch is great. Oh my God, it would be so amazing to never be off key. Well, here's the thing. Very few of us actually have perfect pitch because perfect pitch is physical. It is a physical thing where you are just incapable of not hearing the right pitch or not knowing the right pitch. Relative pitch, which the vast majority of us have, is more that you hear relative to what came before. In other words, if there's this note, and I want to go up to a fourth in my mind, I'll think, here comes the bride, and I'll go, da, dun, da, da. So there's the fourth, da, da. So I know by the note that came before what the next note needs to be. And perfect pitch doesn't need to do that. However, relative pitch allows you, if somebody says, oh, we need to change the key, instead of going, da, dun, da, da, we need to go, da, dun, da, da. For me, it's pretty easy. I just go to the new pitch and then hit that fourth above it. Whereas with somebody with perfect pitch, they're going to have to go back and relearn in some ways, because what they, and I don't mean just two notes together, I mean a song or whatever, because they know what the song needs to be. And if they have to change it, it's a different kettle of corn. So perfect pitch isn't always a blessing. In fact, sometimes it is downright frustrating. If I hear someone off pitch, I'm like, and I have really good relative pitch, there's no question. It's not perfect. It's really good relative pitch. But if I hear something off key, I know it's off key and I can fix it to be on key. Whereas someone with perfect pitch might have real actual physical pain from hearing something that is off key. So it's an interesting thing. You think of perfection as a good thing, but not always. And the same happens with recall. And wow, I've gotten all over the place on this episode. But the same thing happens with our subconscious mind. It remembers everything. It can recall things for us that we have consciously forgotten. But can you imagine if every single thing you ever saw or heard or felt or tasted was available perfectly at any time? It would be overwhelming to your senses. I don't want to remember everything. I want to remember what I want to remember when I want to remember it. So I can recall it by having part of my meditation be, give me greater insight into this notion of rock bottom being something that gives you a firm foundation for the first time in potentially a very long time. Or give me melodies for the musical I'm writing. Or give me ideas about where to go for dinner. I don't know. Whatever it is you want, you can set your intention. And that can be a really powerful and beautiful thing. All right. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. It was a little meandery, but that's okay. I am Isolde Trachtenberg. This episode was brought to you by my book, Speak From Within, which is all about communication. It was also brought to you by my favorite productivity and creativity and meditation app called Brain FM. That's an affiliate link. If you are interested in trying it, I use it to meditate. I use it to be productive, to be creative. I use it to do my accounting and bookkeeping, which is amazing because those are not my strong suits, but I'm able to do it much better and much faster when I plug myself into the Brain FM app, because it uses music and sort of stimulating the neural pathways you need to have stimulated in order to do the tasks you want to do. And I love, love, love it and have been using it. I'm on if you use it every week, I'm on like a 42 week streak, but I use it every single day. Anyway, it's there. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day. And that's it. I, as always, remind you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the show if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2024. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope.